This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Back when The Sopranos faded to black, maybe you thought that was the end of great stories about the mob. But last week, the mafia burst back into the public consciousness, this time in real life, as the FBI rounded up more than 100 suspected mobsters from New England to New York. The takeaway? Old school organized crime is still a force to be reckoned with. Here's Janice Fedarczyk, assistant director in charge of the FBI's New York office.
The notion that today's mob families are more genteel and less violent than in the past is put to lie by the charges contained in the indictments unsealed today. Even more of a myth is the notion that the mob is a thing of the past, that La Cosa Nostra is a shadow of its former self. We deal in reality, and the reality is that the mob, like nature, abhors a vacuum.
New York still has five major organized crime families who continue to engage in loan sharking, extortion, and drug trafficking. But here in Boston and elsewhere in New England, the mafia is much weaker than it once was. Or is it? The mob in New England, that's today's talker. Listeners, were you surprised by last week's mob arrests? And have you ever had dealings with someone who you thought might be connected? Do you think the days of organized crime in New England are over? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Comment online if you want at wbur.org/Boston. Well, joining us now are two reporters who spent years covering this story, WBUR's own David Boeri. Hi there, David.
Hi, Meghna.
And also from the studios of WRNI in Providence, Bill Malinowski of the Providence Journal. Welcome to Radio Boston, Bill.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's just start with sort of the big name that came out of the arrest here locally, and that's Luigi Menacchio, the 83-year-old former longtime boss of the Patriarca crime family. Bill, he was the biggest New England name to come out of the arrest. Remind us in a little bit more detail what he is and why the feds were so interested in him.
Well, he's been part of the landscape here probably for 40 or 50 years, and he was the acting head of organized crime in New England since the early 90s. One thing in the intro, I just want to set the record straight. People are always asking me, is it Baby Shanks or is it Baby Shacks? And for years, it was incorrectly reported that it was Baby Shanks. And from what I've been told, a Providence police officer arrested him once inadvertently wrote on a card that it was Baby Shanks, but it's actually Baby Shacks because
okay.
He had a baby face as a young man and used to shack up with a lot
so
of women.
You're hearing David here because he...
I'm sorry, Bill.
This was a can of worms we were hoping we weren't going to open, but right. We have to now because David has the opposite
Bill,
view.
Bill, Frank Salemi I knew quite well. He was the predecessor, the preceding Don. He was a Baby Shanks man himself.
Okay.
And the stadies up here say it was always Baby Shanks, but let's just stipulate, either way, the guy is about as dead as a dish of osso buco right now.
Right. Yeah, he's got serious problems now.
So I mean, what was he up to in Providence before the feds got him last week?
He was hanging around strip clubs a lot and spending a lot of time in Florida, but the indictment is pretty simple. It's him and a guy by the name of Thomas Iafrati, and they were indicted for shaking down two strip clubs, the Satin Doll and the Cadillac Lounge, and some adult businesses affiliated with the Cadillac Lounge.
So the
indictment accuses them of a $2,900 cash payment that he was receiving each month from the Cadillac Lounge.
David, let me ask you, I mean, shaking down a strip club doesn't exactly have the same ring to it as the kind of power that the mob once held here.
No, that's right. I mean, this is not your father's mob. You know, there was a day, the heyday, Raymond Patriarca was called the mayor of Providence. And Life magazine called Boston the murder capital of the USA. That was in the old days. Nobody is calling Louis Menacchio the mayor of Providence. In fact, as Bill just said, they got him extorting a couple of strip clubs and porno clubs, which isn't exactly mainstream business. So up here in Boston, my sources say there are about 25 to 30 members of the club, and that's about enough for a baseball team with some subs. And trust me, they need subs when their players are 60s and 70 years old, even if some of them are called Chief Crazy Horse.
And Bill, I mean, is the mob as diminished down there in Providence as well?
It's diminished, but it's definitely still here. I would say there's also this fallacy out there that there's hundreds of made members of the mob. There never was hundreds of members here. You know, there's probably 8 to 10 made members, and then there's a bunch of associates who work for the made guys. But, you know, they're still very active in gambling, loan sharking, strip clubs, drugs. Not as high profile as they once were. I mean, you don't see these guys on street corners the way you once did. But, you know, a lot of them are in jail. A lot of them are older. But I still believe there is a place for them in the pecking order of the criminal world here.
Mm. And actually, David and Bill, what's been fascinating to me in this story, and maybe other people who don't know it in as much detail as the two of you do, is this Boston-Providence connection between the, sort of where the center of gravity was for the mob in New England.
Yeah, Boston revolved around the world of Providence for so many years when Raymond Patriarca was the boss. And they really did control. They controlled judges. They controlled cops, which they don't do to any extent now. But, yeah, Boston surrounded Providence. And now, as about 2009, the power has come back to Boston, only because the new Don is reputed to be Peter Lamone. He's 70, oh, he's in his mid-70s. Interestingly enough, he just got $26 million awarded to him last year by the federal government for his wrongful conviction and long imprisonment. So he is out now presiding over this thing of ours. But to give you an idea of some of the status, a lot of this is disorganized crime. For instance, their consigliere, their acting consigliere, until recently was a stone-cold junkie who was dumb enough to be selling dope over the phone and out of his own house, and he was the consigliere. So they have been largely infiltrated by all sorts of informants, and there's good reason to believe that Louis Minacchio himself was, at least at one time, an FBI informant.
Huh. Let's take a quick call here. Jim is calling from Wayland. Welcome to Radio Boston, Jim.
Yes, I'd like to give you an experience that I had about 12, 14 years ago.
Oh, absolutely.
I was inspecting property for people who were involved with insurance and sales and such, so it's my job to do some legwork. I was sent to a property in the north part of Rhode Island. We have someone with you from the Providence Journal?
Yes.
Yes, I work for the Journal.
I have a question. At that time, roughly 10 years ago, was prostitution, or sex for money, I guess, indoors, was that legal in Rhode Island?
Still is.
Okay, I thought they changed it.
Otherwise.
And okay, so this was sex indoors for money. I was in the building, walking on the best carpet I've ever set my feet on, and it was in the lower level of a two-story building, but it was also within sight of a public safety, let's call it a public safety building. Mm-hmm. And I don't see how that business could have operated without the without the knowledge of the local politicians. But beyond that, I met two of the, I assume I met two of the prostitutes. And in fact, they were the only people I met in there. It was as if it was set up awaiting my inspection. I got the information I needed. I got a hell of a lot more than I needed, information-wise. But these women, not speaking English, obviously having no money, frankly, just robes, no clothes, other than, I assume, what they had on. So it's really slavery, is it not? So we had illegally smuggled in women mm-hmm. performing a legal sex trade somehow in Rhode Island.
Jim, thank you so much for your call. Bill Malinowski of the Providence Journal. Does that sound like a familiar story of what the mob
was up to?
There's
been a lot of stories here about massage parlors, strip clubs. There's Rhode Island, Providence is always. It's known kind of as the sex club capital of New England. I mean, buses come down here from Portland, Maine, and New Hampshire to come to the strip clubs on weekends, tour buses. So, and, you know, organized crime has always had its fingers in strip clubs, and there's a lot of strip clubs in the Providence area.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people look at, like, a $2,900 bag of cash, you know, allegedly going to Louis Minacchio, and they say that that's not a lot of money. Well, when you start adding up 6 or 7 or 8 strip clubs a month and a bag with $3,000, that's a lot of money.
David Boyer, let me ask you, why is it that you think that the FBI still has so much interest in what you're now calling disorganized crime? I mean, like you've said, a lot of these guys were put away for decades now. So why in 2011 do we still care?
Well, I mean, look, they are violent individuals, or a number of people that are prone to violence. And this is, I don't condone this whatsoever, but you had in the early 1960s, right here in Boston, J. Edgar Hoover launched the War on Organized Crime. It became a national directive, and that meant the mafia. And so there was the momentum of that. And all these years later, it is still the mafia that they're going after. There tends to be a lot of inertia. Now, they're never going to stamp it out, but it's going to get to some level. You tamp it down, and the question is, are there competing interests that need to be attended to as well? Obviously, after 9/11, the FBI shifted manpower into terrorism. But, you know, there is the certain inertia toward the mafia. They have infiltrated it heavily over the years. They still tend to tap the mafia as opposed to other crime organizations. But again, I don't condone the mafia whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Bill Malinowski, so obviously, I mean, the mafia in Boston and Rhode Island isn't necessarily what it once was, at least of the Cosa Nostra variety. But what about, other organized crimes groups, say, from Russia or from China?
There hasn't been much evidence of that in Rhode Island. Russian organized crime. I mean, there's a big Asian population here, Laotian and Cambodian. But it's more street crime, gangs. Again, going back to David's point there about the mob today, what's interesting is, like, the Providence Police Department still has full-time mob investigators. State Police still has full-time mob investigators. The FBI office here, still full-time mob investigators. I'm sure the same is the case in Boston. So coming out of Washington with the Justice Department, depending on what the nature of your crimes are, there's a lot of political corruption here, and there's still organized crime activity. So they've pulled back a little to concentrate on terrorism, but it's still a priority in Rhode Island. And you can speak more about that in terms of what's going on in Boston. But
Bill, I got a question for you. What do you think? Now, I don't know how well you follow New York. I often wonder whether there's any place where the FBI, where the mafia is really entrenched and powerful. Now, obviously, it's the biggest city in the country.
Right.
But most of those five families have been infiltrated. The leaders of most of them have been busted. Do you get a sense that there's certain places where the FBI, where the mafia is still very, very strong?
Definitely. In New York, you know, the people I speak to in law enforcement, I would say it's fair to say there's hundreds of made members of organized crime families in New York. Mm-hmm. And also, the crimes they're involved in are a little more sophisticated than they are in Providence. They're often involved in labor rackets much more heavily than they are in Rhode Island. I mean, you see pieces of it here, but generally it's more street crime in Providence versus the more sophisticated construction industry.
Yeah.
Concrete industry in New York.
And here it is loan sharking and gambling. Mm.
Those are the two primary
activities.
I would agree with that.
Well, let me throw one last question to both of you. I mean, I know why I find this story fascinating. It's sort of almost the theater of it at a distance. But the two of you have been reporting on the mob for years, for decades, and going as deep as anyone I know. What's been the attraction or the compulsion that keeps you on this story? David.
Well, for me, it is the fact that this war was launched in Boston by J. Edgar Hoover, forced into it in many ways by the Kennedys. But what's intriguing here is that the conduct of that war, which was often a good war, at some point became a dirty war, where the obsession with getting the mafia enabled Whitey Bulger and Steve Flemmy, the non-mafia, to become an even more potent and evil force in the city that corrupted vast swaths of the city.
I was wondering why you would make a presence in this conversation. Bill Malinowski, why did you follow the mob for so long?
Well, a couple things. I think, first of all, you get great play when you do these stories. There's a huge audience. And a place like Rhode Island, everybody has some connection to this. I did a big series called State of the Mob a couple of years ago online. And just about everybody I spoke to had some family member who was kind of a screw-up, who was in hock to the mob at some point. They had an uncle, a cousin, a stepson, somebody. So it really touches a lot of people's lives. And I think shows like The Sopranos and movies like Goodfellas just perpetuate this whole fascination with the subject.
Bill Malinowski of the Providence Journal, real pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much
for joining us.
And David Boeri, WBUR senior reporter and our in-house mob expert, thank you so much
for being with us. You're welcome. Shout out to Mario Puzo.
Before we go, one comment off Twitter. Adam Sell says, one of my old teachers openly said he worked at a mafia-owned restaurant and he was proud of it. So our listeners, they do get around, don't they? Well, coming up, getting bundled up for the afternoon commute home. If you're taking public transit, let's hope that trip is better than it was this morning. Dead trains, delays, and passengers too frozen to complain. Except by Twitter, of course. That's after the break. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.